Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, 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 my friends. I want to welcome all of our listeners in the U.S. and around the world. I'm Jackie Laura Jones, here with you again for True Forgiveness Teachings on this Tuesday, June 19th, 2018. And I wanted to make a correction to something I said last week on the podcast. I've been announcing that there will be some changes in my format, and I said that I would be doing 2 episodes a week from now on. And actually what I meant to say was I'll be doing 2 episodes a month. So instead of an episode every Tuesday, I'll be broadcasting on the first and third Tuesdays of the month. So I'm working out some new things with my current YouTube channel, the24thhour.com, and probably starting a new one for True Forgiveness Teaching. So if you guys want to subscribe to my newsletter, you can go to my website, jackie.news, J-A-C-K-I-E.news, and then you'll be informed of where you can get new content when it comes out once I have everything set up. So I'll keep you posted. Also, I'll be focusing on starting my webinar series soon for people who want to go more in-depth and apply these themes with more individual attention and mentoring that is beyond the scope of these podcasts. So starting next month, in July of 2018, I'll be broadcasting on the first and third Tuesday of each month instead of every Tuesday. So you can stay tuned as I make these transitions so I'm able to expand the content I want to provide on different platforms. So anyway, okay, so back with me today, though, is our good friend Bruce Rolfe, who will still be doing episodes with me, by the way, even though I will be doing fewer on this platform. I will be blessed, and I'm always blessed to have him when his schedule allows. So he can be found at acimblog.com. Hey, Bruce, welcome back.
Hi, Jackie. Thanks as always.
Oh, so good to be with you again. And it's so funny. I have to tell the listeners, and I've mentioned this before, how much you and I seem to be in sync, because I will often, you guys, email, you know, Bruce a topic, or obviously if he has a suggestion, we kind of go back and forth, but I'll just choose a topic. Of course, there's a myriad of things to choose from, as we know, from the big blue book that is A Course in Miracles. But when I choose something, Bruce, you either are like, oh, I just read that, or I was just thinking about that, or right? I mean, isn't that interesting? It's happened on several
frequently
occasions.
Yeah. Minds are joined, as they say.
That's right. That's right. So it's always good to get your take and your input. And there's never enough time to talk about, you know, relationships and things like that. So much could be said in different ways, and something finally clicks with someone after they've heard something maybe a ton of times. They go, oh my gosh, I get it. I can look at this differently. I understand, you know, what the course means. So I titled this the Healed Relationship, and I thought we could read, you know, from chapter 17, Forgiveness and the Holy Relationship, and specifically from section 5 in chapter 17, section called the Healed Relationship, and we can see how far we get. But it's good stuff, isn't it, Bruce?
It is. Yeah. And that's really one of the primary goals and mechanisms of the course, is to really look at all our relationships, not just to, you know, the primary people in our lives, but to our relationship to everyone and everything, and to recognize that there's always two thought systems to choose from. And one makes those relationships holy or sane, or however you want to call it, wherein we recognize that our interests are the same as everyone else's ultimately, or it's everybody for themselves kind of insane scramble, which is sort of the default, you know, that we come into the world with. It's like, you know, right, this survival kind of the fittest, dog eat dog kind of, you know, ego oriented approach to things. And you know, on the level of form, you know, we do silly things to survive and such, but on the level of mind, we always have the choice to see things differently. And I think that's where, again, this wonderful curriculum addresses the option that we always have 24/7, 365 to see things in a different light. And when we do, we have the option of this, the healed relationship where we can breathe a sigh of relief, realizing that, you know, we really don't have to struggle and fight and suffer along the path that we're on by trying to make things more difficult than they need to be. We can actually afford to let go when we see that, nothing really has messed up our true identity. And because of that, if we really, let that sink in, then the whole basis for true forgiveness is self-evident, and it becomes trivially easy. But that
very
takes a lot
well
of practice.
Said.
But it takes a lot of practice. So just to put it in perspective, you know, we have to kind of keep at it to remind ourselves that we need to adopt a willingness to accept a guidance that's beyond the scope of our little seemingly separate selves, and in order to have a healed relationship with everyone and everything. One quick comment: as I was reading this, I was thinking about Ken Wapnick's comments on relationships, and one of the things that he said that was stuck with me is that if anybody tells you that they have a holy relationship with such and such a person, he says, do not walk, but run like crazy, because the whole point is really not to have a holy relationship with specific people, although that could be an outcome. Really the idea is to have a relationship with the teacher in our mind that makes all relationships sane and all relationships healthy and whole and complete and doesn't go to the one or the other at the expense of kind of silliness that the ego tries to go to.
Yes, and I'm so glad you said that, because I know I've heard that from from Ken, and it's so true, because we get confused and rightfully so that this is one of the stumbling blocks of the Course, and we're gentle with ourselves as we learn and grow in this awareness that the Course is only about mind. So the holy relationship is only in the mind, because this is a non-dualistic thought system which recognizes God as the only reality. But Jesus meets us where we are, so it seems as though we are healing relationships between bodies, and that can often be a reflection. The holy relationship is in the mind. It's never between two bodies that are not there. Although we do start out thinking that way and everything. But it's a really good point that you brought up. We just really have one special relationship, and that's with the ego thought system. And specialness in the Course means special, separate. So it's separate from our oneness in heaven. So when it becomes a holy relationship, we're rejoining in the mind with the holy instant, which, you know, I wanted to read before we read a little bit from chapter 17, section 5. I wanted to just read what the holy relationship is really quick and what the holy instant is, so maybe people can follow along better. Which goes along with exactly how you prefaced this with your example, Bruce, so it's perfect. The Course says that the holy relationship is the Holy Spirit's means to undo the unholy or special relationship by shifting the goal of guilt to the goal of forgiveness or truth. It's the process of forgiveness by which one who had perceived another as separate now joins with him in his mind through Christ's vision. So, and then the holy instant, the Course says, is the instant outside time in which we choose forgiveness instead of guilt. This is going back to the decision-making mind, the decision-maker. So it's the instant outside time in which we choose forgiveness instead of guilt. We choose the miracle instead of a grievance. The Holy Spirit we choose instead of the ego. And it goes on and on with a definition. Of course, you know, we can go on and on. But then it also says the ultimate holy instant is the real world, which is the culmination of all these holy instants we have chosen along the way as we're awakening. So I just thought that would be helpful just to read that before we go into the first paragraph here.
It really is. Yeah, one more thing that kind of ties into that is that, which, you know, I think really is a good reminder, is that the holy relationship is really our natural state. And
yes,
it's really we have to go out of our way to make war on anyone or anything. And it's an enormous cost to us, and primarily it's the cost to our peace. So I'm just reminded of the sixth miracle principle, which is the sixth paragraph in the text, which is miracles are natural. When they do not occur, something has gone wrong. And so basically,
nice.
You know, we really have to you know, brute force our mind into an unnatural state in order to maintain, and force ourselves into an attitude of blame or guilt or comparison. You know, it could be jealousy. It could be anger. It could be, you know, that whole gamut of stuff that's the ego's turf. All those things really are just self-imposed, self-imprisonment that is ultimately unnecessary. And I think that's what the beauty of the contrast of this curriculum called A Course in Miracles does so well, is that it just shows in stark contrast the difference between those two thought systems of just insanely upsetting, unpeaceful conflict that's all based on a dualistic premise, and the sanity that really is beyond that, that is result of letting go of those unnatural forcings of the mind. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's such a great point. And it brings up something that I want to say, add to that too. That's such a great point. We can go on and on. No, that's so great, because relationships are so challenging. And I put in the description of this, we're discussing how to change the purpose of relationships, and you were talking about having in internal peace. Like we do so much to, you know, oh my gosh, everything is, the ego is so complicated. Well, the Course is teaching that forgiveness doesn't do anything. It merely undoes rather all this mess that we've placed in front of what you were saying, who we truly are. Miracles are natural. If they're not happening, something has gone wrong. Well, what's gone wrong is we believe in the ego thought system, which is complication. But if we change the purpose, as the description said, from one of internal peace, from one instead of one of guilt, right? When we change the purpose of the relationship, which is using it as the classroom, the Holy Spirit's purpose would be to see shared interests, not separate. Oh my gosh, everything changes. It doesn't always mean that things on the level of form in the world in your relationships will change immediately, but you will be thinking about them differently, and you can be at peace regardless of what is happening in your relationship. It's so, so powerful, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Awesome.
A real simple test is, you know, what do we accuse our, you know, co-inhabitors of this planet, our brothers and sisters in this world, of things that we wouldn't accuse ourselves of? I mean, that's usually a real good metric. Yeah,
that's right, because there's no difference, the Course is teaching us, between our body or anyone else's bodies, because they're all untrue. And since all minds are joined, when we're making a decision for ourselves, when we're choosing the ego, we're choosing it for the entire sonship, just like when we're choosing the Holy Spirit or forgiveness, we're making that choice for the entire sonship, right?
Yep.
Very powerful.
Yep. All inclusive.
Very
huh?
powerful. Oh my gosh. Well, do you want to go ahead and read the first paragraph, chapter 17, section 5, paragraph 1, page 362, for anyone who has their book out. Sometimes people email me that they do. So
exactly, yeah. Okay, the healed relationship. The holy relationship is the expression of the holy instant in living in this world. Like everything about salvation, the holy instant is a practical device, witnessed to by its results. The holy instant never fails. The experience of it is always felt. Yet without expression, it is not remembered. The holy relationship is a constant reminder of the experience in which the relationship became what it is. And as the unholy relationship is a continuing hymn of hate in praise of its maker, so is the holy relationship a happy song of praise to the redeemer of relationships. So there again, the contrast between these two thought systems couldn't be more evident. And we always know how we feel. If we're not feeling at peace, we know which one we've chosen. And we just need to forgive ourselves and pick ourselves back up and look at it differently again.
Absolutely, absolutely. What I think is so challenging for people is anyone listening, yes, we understand very well that we're thinking, yeah, but this is happening in my, I'm having these arguments all the time, or I'm having this all the time, and it's right in front of me. And yes, that Jesus is meeting us where we are in A Course in Miracles, and that is why we start by noticing when we're upset or we're having these, quote, problems in our relationships. That's our clue and our red flag to say, oh my gosh, wait a minute, this situation is showing me the contents of my mind. Because I'm upset, I've chosen the world of separation, of course, the world of form, bodies, everything else in it, and I'm being shown that by my brother or sister, whatever the altercation is and whatever type of relationship it is. I'm being shown that I can look at this differently. Like you said, Bruce, we can contrast the two thought systems when we go back to the decision maker and say, okay, I'm upset, so I've chosen the ego, which means I'm believing that I'm a body and that this is real. So guys, listening, this doesn't mean that you don't want to handle issues with your relationship on form where they are. It just means we're never going to handle it and be at peace with the ego as our teacher. It just won't work. So this is where we start. We start with saying, I can change my mind about this. I can change the purpose of the relationship when I choose the Holy Spirit and that thought system. The Holy Spirit will retranslate how I'm looking at the relationship. And then from that thought system, my words and actions will come. It will direct my functioning. Whereas before, when we're in the throes of the ego and the panic, we're making it very real to ourselves, and we're not going to respond. We're going to respond from fear. We're not going to respond from a place that really is going to help us heal the relationship. Again, not always in form, but with a healed mind and perceiving the relationship properly, there will be a time, I know it's hard for people to believe, that it won't matter as much what happens in form because you've withdrawn your belief. It doesn't mean you don't want to be with people or whatever, but that's the power of your mind. You'll be looking at it differently, and you'll know that your responses are also the best for your brother or your sister or whoever's in the relationship, because it's coming from that reflection of love. It's coming from the right mind, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Powerful.
It really is. It really is. Another kind of everyday example that I find really helpful is if I find myself, even in the slightest little bit, wanting to make the other person wrong or condemn in any way, that's usually a clue that there's some part of myself that I'm not at peace with, that is my projection, and which, you know, again, with the tip of the hat and kudos to Ken Wapnick for really taking Freud's work to the next level and you know, showing us how, you know, the projection that he you know, basically emphasized our nighttime dreams. But you know, Ken's commentary on Freud's work is that, you know, what Freud said, you know, the dreams being the royal road to the unconscious. Well, everything, A Course in Miracles says that all your time is spent in dreaming. And so if that's the case, then our daytime dreaming, if we want to call this world a metaphor, the metaphor of space and time, then those relationships that we have that seem to be outside are really projections of our unconscious thinking. And those projections, if they're not founded in, based in unity, but are based on a belief in division and duality and separation, then those are going to be adversarial, and we're going to want to make the other person wrong as a way of defending that thought system, because secretly we're afraid of really the loving kindness that's beyond it, which is totally insane. But that's really the, you know, what we need to look at is, why would we want to make the other person wrong, unless we wanted to keep ourselves and the other person in a miserable, suffering state. And that's, you know,
right.
clearly insane. But until we look at it with that kind of clarity, it just kind of goes, runs like an unchecked software program that's just running amok and nobody's minding the store kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know?
That's right. So. Oh, very well said. Again, oh my gosh. So much can always be said, and we can always go further with all this. It's just an excellent point. We have to remember that the projections coming from us,
mm-hmm.
you know, the world isn't being done to us, which goes along with your point, Bruce. We think that people are really doing something to us, and so we have to correct that. We have to be right. You know, we have to say our point of view with huge investment. Right? Because we believe it's real. So there wouldn't be anything wrong with having an opinion and stating it, but we can either come from a peaceful place and state our opinion, or come from a place of fear needing to be right because we feel we're attacked and now we have to attack back, right?
Exactly. And as Ken points out in his commentary on this section, he says we need to go gradually. We need to, you know, when we find ourselves attacking, it's just kind of what sometimes catch ourselves either mid word or mid thought, you know, when we're kind of preparing a defense in our mind against someone in order to defend our position or to
right.
you know, make
right.
the other person wrong, you know, all those kind of stuff. We can kind of catch ourselves and be observant as this, you know, as of course suggested, it's a course of mind training. We can just kind of notice that without condemnation and say, oh, there I go again off on this ego tangent and,
right.
and catch ourselves before it becomes a bigger problem. I love, you know, your brother-in-law Gary's example of, you know, if you have road rage, you know, if you instead of giving someone a hand signal, shall we say, on the
right.
on the road,
Gary,
that
might
provoke you know, some kind of assault with or without
right.
weaponry, you know, that might be a totally different outcome.
Exactly.
But if we can just kind of catch ourselves in mid thought, that's the idea is ultimately to, you know. Before we even go there, ultimately, but if we can just kind of see how quickly we resort to wanting to defend and to you know, make an adversarial situation where there doesn't need to be one, where we could really find a cooperative, you know, what's in it for everyone's best interest, and try to go there first, try the diplomacy first, rather in the nuclear option last. You know?
Yeah.
And eventually we don't need the weaponry at all, you know, if we recognize.
That's right.
You know, like Don Juan's, Carlos Castaneda's teacher, I remember one of his books, he said, you know, what would you do if somebody came after you with, you know, high-powered rifle? He said, well, I wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
You know, but that's kind of the ideal is, you know, if we kind of catch ourselves in enough in advance and practice over and over and over again, we don't even set ourselves up for that inner saboteur's damaging assault on our relationships.
Very well said. And we did set ourselves up at the very beginning. I think
mm-hmm.
it bears reminding and remembering that this was set up in the beginning when we chose separation. So we're viewing these separation scripts and reacting to them as if they're happening right now. And now we have to defend something instead of doing what you said, Bruce, which is just stopping in the moment. If we can just remember, and we'll read on and read Ken's commentary too, but if we can just stop in the moment, that's the first step and say, wait a minute, here I am. I'm about to attack. I'm about to make this very, very real. It doesn't mean we won't address our issues, but if we can change our inner teacher first, that things, our experience will be very different, won't it?
It really is. And Ken quotes from I think it's chapter 27, actually, where he's talking about unless a gentler dream preceded his awakening, you know, then we would, you know, freak out, basically.
Right.
And so we have to kind of gradually ease into it and replace our separate interests with a shared interest, replace our separate identity with a shared identity. And that's really the easy, graceful, gentle way to go through this process is to just kind of notice that we feel better when our sense of self really embraces the interests of others and the best possible outcome of all concern, and that, you know, it's obviously a whole lot easier because we don't have to be thinking in terms of who am I leaving out. It's a whole lot less complicated if you include everyone, even if you don't know who everyone is. But just have that intention and allow ourselves to be guided in our mind to that choice. Then it becomes easier and easier over time to gradually replace this dysfunctional identity with one that really does work for everyone's welfare.
Oh, yes. Excellent. Excellent. Shall I read paragraph 2?
Sure.
Okay, let's see. All right. The holy relationship, a major step toward the perception of the real world, is learned. It is the old unholy relationship transformed and seen anew. The holy relationship is a phenomenal teaching accomplishment. In all its aspects, as it begins, develops, and becomes accomplished, it represents the reversal of the unholy relationship. Be comforted in this. The only difficult phase is the beginning. For here, the goal of the relationship is abruptly shifted to the exact opposite of what it was. This is the first result of offering the relationship to the Holy Spirit to use for his purpose. That's a great paragraph.
I can't help but think of the classic appropriate example of Helen Schuckman and Bill Thetford's relationship, which prompted this whole process of scribing this book, which is they were in a very adversarial, competitive, antagonistic, nasty relationship.
Yes, that was awful.
And they finally realized this is horrible. I mean, they were just honest with themselves, and I think Bill said to Helen, there must be a better way. There must be another way. And that's what precipitated Helen's response of, let's find it together. I'll help you find it. And that's that willingness to work together. That shared interest, I think, is so pivotally important. And that really does. I mean, you could think of it as either way, it invokes that inner kindness teacher to help us along, which is really the awareness that we took with us into this dream of duality, into this seemingly material world that leads us out step by step, and it guides us every step of the way. We don't have to be concerned about each little minutia detail, but just know that we have help in our minds, and that help can be summoned in everyone's mind, and we call that forth in each other as we call it forth in ourselves. And each choice that we make for kindness becomes a demonstration that allows other people to resonate with that same choice.
Beautifully said, Bruce, because as Jesus says in the Course, to teach is to demonstrate.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's powerful.
Yeah.
And how do we demonstrate?
Yeah.
By our choice in the mind. By thinking about people correctly, that will guide our behavior. Very powerful.
And be okay with the resistance when it comes up, because as it points out, we're in the beginning phases. It's pretty challenging because we're realizing, we've really gotten used to wanting to fight for everything. With the old cliche is this a private fight or can anyone join in? It's a very popular thing to be, upset about, our political situation, our environment, our whether it's under our own roof or across the planet or maybe pan-galactic, who knows? There's so many things that we feel put upon and unconsciously or unconsciously a martyr or a victim of. And on some level, some usually typically deeply unconscious level, there's a part of us that says, nah, no, you made this whole thing up. You didn't do it by yourself.
Right.
You, along with everyone else, made this collective dream where there appear to be all these billions of seemingly individual identities just on the human level, let alone all the other life forms as we think of them. That have these births and deaths and these surreal experiences that we call life, but within that there's the opportunity to summon self-awareness that says, wait a minute, maybe there is a better way, maybe there's another way of relating to this dream, and a holy relationship with our experience in this world then can take the form of seeing everything as an opportunity to choose peace instead of warfare of some kind or another.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It's so well said. And it's so interesting. Forgiveness and this teaching has helped me so much. And I want to tell the listeners that this is a process. And it's interesting that the mind is so powerful that all these things we talk about on the podcast and all these, a lot of them are these, you know, big concepts that it's like, what is the Course really saying this and what's going on? You know, but the mind is so powerful that the Holy Spirit, the right part of your mind, will automatically take over when you have the willingness to make the choice. And it gets easier and easier and easier. And I tell a lot of clients in my sessions and just people in general that maybe email me something about the Course or something they're having difficulty with, you know, it is a process. And sometimes we don't go deeply into the metaphysics of it. We just say, you know what? I'm not peaceful, and I'm willing to see it differently. I'm just willing to make another choice. And maybe that's all we do in that moment.
Yeah.
We don't even go into, oh my gosh, it's not real, you know, because that sometimes engenders fear, because
then
we feel that we're losing our identity and everything. But Jesus assures us that this is a process, and to be gentle, and eventually it'll be your choice to want to have spiritual vision replacing physical sight, and the investment in the physical. You'll know that everybody is with you in oneness as they really are. This is revealed to you more and more. So it just becomes your choice. It doesn't become anything that's forced, or you go through these unsettling periods where you feel like things are being taken away. Because the Course says you're just recognizing the meaninglessness of them, and that the ego gave them a meaning that it doesn't have. And that awareness creeps into your mind, which is why, you know, we always say it's a process, and it gets easier. So I just wanted to share a little bit of that experience, because that's what's, you know, happened to me over these years. The Holy Spirit thought system just becomes a part of who you are, as the ego thought system was all that time, where we would judge first. And so with the Holy Spirit mind, you just forgive first, which means you're looking at everything differently. Everybody has shared interests. What's that? Well, the shared interest is that we want to go home. We all unconsciously want to go home. In fact, we already are. But we want to go back to that awareness of perfect oneness. And so our shared interest is that in the dream. We know that everybody behaving badly, you know, on the level of form, they're behaving badly because they're in fear, or they wouldn't be behaving badly, and that's including ourselves. So that's what we mean by looking at shared interest. We just know what's behind the behavior, what's behind it. It's the ego thought system. That's what's behind it, right?
Yeah. A moment ago, you said something that triggered a reminder of how simple it is. Because really, it's 99.999% of it is done for us if we have the little willingness to choose the teacher of kindness that's in our mind. And I think it was kind of like a light switch. We don't have to know, you know, what the network load is on the 12,000-volt line that feeds power to our house, and whether the substation has had a recent inspection done, and whether or not the utility grid is functioning properly across the country, and what the reserves are and the reservoirs for the hydro, you know, we don't have to know any of that stuff.
We don't
all
have
to know,
to
is
know
if,
it.
If you want the light to come on, you know, with a few exceptions, you know, we just have to know that there's a little plastic thing on the wall called a switch, and if we throw that switch, the light will come on. We don't have to have this, you know, big technical insight, and have the whole thing in our head of how it's all put together.
How's it happening? Yeah.
How's it all coming together? We just know that you know, most of the time, in this case, to generalize to what we're talking about here, is really all the time, if we choose that thought system, it's like throwing a light switch on. We just know it's going to work, and we don't have to deal with the really sophisticated. It's not complicated, but it's sophisticated spiritual technology that this forgiveness process represents, that heals our relationships, that undoes the unconscious guilt by letting other people off the hook when we recognize, wow, if I'm, you know, making a federal case against this person in my mind, I'm making that same case against myself. And why would I want to do that? Once we have, you know, a few of those, you know, under our belt and realize, wow, you know, I did this a few times and I kind of let this thing go by realizing that there really wasn't any substance to it. I think that's, again, that the all important foundational piece that we get training in. Not that we have to know the whole background, but we just have to know that if it comes and goes in the dream of space and time, it's not founded in eternity, and therefore anything that is ephemeral or subject to change can't possibly affect the eternal spirit that we all have and are. And given that premise, then everything becomes forgivable. And we don't have to know anything more than that about it. We just have to know that if I'm not at peace, I must have chosen wrongly, and I can choose again. I can throw that light switch and turn on the light on the unconscious guilt that suggests that we did something wrong. And when we heal ourselves and the so-called others that are involved in our thoughts at the same time.
Oh my gosh. And you always have so many good analogies and metaphors. And that was one of your best, in my opinion. We don't have to know the whole electric grid system. We don't have to know everything that's going on. That's
Is it 60
awesome.
Cycle or 50 cycle? You know, so well,
oh,
I don't
my
care.
Heavens. We don't care. We just want to flick the switch, right?
Is it three phase or two phase? Well, it probably, you know, we don't need to know that.
Heaven. Yeah. You know, it's exhausting. Maybe the listeners feel my pain. You know, it's exhausting just to think of having to know all that, isn't it? You just, when you think of all that, it's like, oh my, I mean, it's just a good example is all, you know, it's just a really good example just to say we're not aware of the vastness of our unconscious mind, but the Holy Spirit is and can heal everything in the same way, because an illusion is an illusion is an illusion, no matter what the form, no matter the form it takes, right?
Yeah, and kind of like that grid metaphor, I think the fact that, you know, we have these, you know, technologies like the electric grid and the internet and you know, radio connectivity around the planet and all these things that are kind of metaphoric for the interconnectedness, those kind of become helpful tools, I think, sometimes to realize that, you know, what we're doing when we're changing our thinking from the punishing, harsh, cruel silliness of the ego to the kind, let off the hook, you know, nobody's guilty in truth perspective of sanity, we're affecting the entire network beyond space and time, because that's where our true identity is. Our true identity exists outside of space and time, and is bigger than the whole cosmos. But that's not what we see in our everyday stuff. But we're learning to kind of grow into that, or really to undo our misunderstanding. And I couldn't help but laughing a few moments ago when you talked about the undoing. I was thinking that it's we're really undoing the undo-do is knowing that what seems to hit the fan isn't real, you know.
Yeah.
so there's really nothing in truth that is going to hit a fan that doesn't exist, you know. So anyway.
Right. Very good. Exactly.
Do you want to read the third paragraph, or shall I? Or
sure. You know what? Do you want to read Ken's commentary?
Oh yes, please.
On,
let's do that.
On page 27. That starts with the process of the holy relationship, and then read the third paragraph?
Yeah. The process of the holy relationship, beginning with a little willingness and concluding with our full acceptance of the truth, transforms our world from perceptions of suffering and death to those of hope and happiness. So obviously the perceptions of suffering and death are the ego interpretations of things, aren't they? These are the stepping stones toward the attainment of the real world, wherein all perception dissolves into the knowledge of God. However, the fear of the dissolution of the ego, the separated self, prevents our making a decision for heaven one instant and leaping into the arms of our creator the next. We need to go gradually, as we will read of in the ego's dream of terror. And that was part of what we were quoting from earlier. The gentler dream, basically, where we kind of slowly but surely, you know, let ourselves and everyone in our lives off the hook from the incriminating inner voice of the ego. So then Ken goes on. He says, the process of forgiveness and healing can be extremely upsetting because the very ground of our existence is threatened. What keeps the picture of guilt intact, protecting us from ever choosing against it and for the Holy Spirit, is the special relationship. If we begin to question our special relation, our specialness, its seemingly solid frame begins to crumble, and we're suddenly confronted with a terrifying picture of the sinful self, behind which is the right-minded memory that would awaken us to the true self, with a capital S. To Jesus' description of the stage as disturbed, disjunctive, and distressing, note the alliterative D, we can add desperation. Desperados, as the ego flails wildly around in savage attempts to salvage itself from the onslaught of the mind's decision for forgiveness. There's some pretty good alliteration there, too. Jesus cautions us to be wise to its nefarious plotting. Basically, you know, saying, you know, just, you know, beware the backlash, because, you know, the ego is not going to go down without a fight, because we think that we're getting some kind of mileage out of this insane thought system. And so, you know, we have a lot invested in it. So we need to actually shift our investment to our real identity that's shared, and recognize the comfort and the stability of that true identity in order to become more willing to, you know, instead of just sticking our toe in the water, you know, gradually right. moving to the whole different ocean kind of thing, or a whole different continent, or whatever the metaphor works for you.
Right. No, it's yeah. it's really true about how he says, you know, this process of healing can be really upsetting because our individual special self is threatened. And so once we get past that, we're so afraid to look. The ego mm-hmm. tells us, oh, don't look. But Jesus is saying, when you look with me, I'll show you that everything is okay. I'll show you you don't have anything to fear, right? You have not really separated. You're the same as your brother, not as bodies, right? But as what we really are. So as in that commentary where the ego just flails wildly around to try to salvage itself from the onslaught of the mind's decision for forgiveness, as soon as we choose and we start choosing, a lot of my clients say, and rightfully so, that their experience is, well, things seem to be getting worse, and I'm choosing the Holy Spirit. Well, one of the reasons for that is because, yes, the ego feels very, very threatened. And so what happens when you, like, corner a wild animal, for an example, you know, you don't know what it's going to do. It's going to come at you because, you know, it's fearing. So we fear for our existence. And sometimes the ego will come out in droves, and we feel that things are getting worse before they're getting better. But hang in there, guys. Right, Bruce?
Yeah,
hang in there.
Exactly. Patience is a must. Tolerance is a must. And I think another thing that's really helpful, that a concept that I found really useful over the years is if we're, you know, basically, as we enter this curriculum, kind of like mindless zombies in a, you know, drunken stupor, you know, in a dream state, wandering around, essentially not aware or certainly in a massive denial of what our thoughts and feelings are, when we start paying more attention to them, and not denying
yes.
what we're thinking and feeling, and really being honest with the kind of stuff that goes through our mind on a moment-to-moment basis, you know, it can be kind of terrifying. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm harboring this kind of, you know, murderous thought about this politician or this neighbor or this, you know, somebody on TV or you know, whatever it happens to be. It can be kind of scary, but the idea is that it's kind of like, you know, the media over the last few decades. If you compare what we have access to, just as a metaphor, now mm-hmm. that our grandparents and great grandparents didn't, you know, they might have been able to pick up a book or a magazine now and then, but they don't have the digital revolution that we have to bring instantaneous information from
right.
countless sources at our fingertips. And
right.
so I think it's sort of analogous to the fact that once we start really looking at the contents of our mind, it's not that the insane thoughts are increasing. It's just that we notice them, and they've been there all along. And we're just, you know, kind of appalled and aghast at what we're seeing because
yeah,
we're finally paying attention.
We weren't paying attention.
Exactly. So it's not like things really have gotten worse. It's just they seem worse only because we are noticing them more. Yeah.
Very true. They seem worse. And that's a really important point, because people do experience it as being worse. But you're right. It seems worse only because now we're just looking. we're looking at what has always been there, right?
And the most important thing to do at that point is go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, but what is there is false. There is no sin. There is
exactly.
no sin. Yeah.
And the way we discover that there is no sin, but only errors, is by listening to the counsel of that inner kindness teacher, a.k.a. Holy Spirit, or the figure that's called Jesus in A Course in Miracles, that really is the part of our minds that we took with us into the dream that says nobody's guilty in truth. That everything that appears to be things that come and go, that's just a massive hologram that is there for our mind training purpose, to look at the contents of our mind until we're really willing to forgive ourselves and everyone else completely. But it's a gradual process. We need to gradually notice more and more that, at first when we, as the Course points out, the first thing to do when we realize that it's not about the other person, when we withdraw our projections, then it's like, oh my gosh, all these horrible thoughts are my, dastardly ego conspiracies, and have nothing to do with the other person. And so we want to, essentially incriminate ourselves. But then when we realize, wait a minute, that whole thought system isn't what I really am. And that can be chosen against. So it's not like you bring it inside and now you're stuck with it. No, that inner kindness teacher says, let's bring it to the light together. Let's haul this out onto the close encounter beam of blasting light and this altar in the mind, and watch this incrimination, whether it's other incrimination or self-incrimination, just vaporize when we look at it together. And moment to moment, it doesn't happen all at once, but moment to moment, if we just drag those incriminating, condemning thoughts out to that place in our mind where our inner kindness teacher lights it up and says, hey, nothing happened here. Move along.
Right.
Not the droids you're looking for.
We can
let all these crazy things off, crazy ideas off, go and let everybody off the hook, because there really isn't anything worth, as the Beatles said, nothing to get hung about here. We can really truly afford to forgive from that
Beatles.
Perspective, but only the perspective of that inner kindness teacher. Because if we try to do it on our own, we're going to get in trouble. We're going to either get stuck in self-blame or self-incrimination or some other kind of endless loop that doesn't work. Right.
I think it's important to say too, which this always pops into my mind, which must mean it's kind of important to say, because sometimes people tune in to the podcast and they're, because they like the title or they tell something's going on, they don't realize it's a podcast about A Course in Miracles, a particular thought system. So I sometimes say, in every episode, if you're tuning in for the first time, we're very light-hearted about this, sometimes when Bruce and I talk, meaning when we're talking about not taking everything seriously or remembering to laugh, this is a right-minded, this is done in the mind, meaning A Course in Miracles is only about what you're thinking in your mind. It has nothing to do with behavior. So we're never like excusing bad behavior or pretending like people and ourselves included sometimes and others are not behaving badly. It's not about that at all, which can be misinterpreted. It really is about how we are looking at our life, as you said so well earlier, and that we've been talking about throughout this particular podcast too. The course is really about, which teacher do I want to look at my dream with, this dream of separation? Which teacher in my mind? What is my starting point? I think you were mentioning the starting point earlier in this broadcast, Bruce. Where are we starting from? So whatever anybody is doing out there, we have the power of choice of how we can interpret how we're seeing this illusion. So it wouldn't mean that we aren't addressing issues or anything, but who are we addressing the issues with? Meaning, who are we watching our dream with? So we're going to have two different experiences depending on who we put in charge. So I kind of always want to, I think that's a very good reminder, because there's always a confusion of levels, and sometimes it seems as though it, you know, people that practice the course, oh, it's just an illusion, so it doesn't matter. But that isn't what the course is teaching at all, right, Bruce?
Exactly. Yeah, and that's a very common thing, and I know, again, Ken Wapnick, you know, brilliant course teacher who shares this idea that, you know, it's an easy mistake to get into, to just. In fact, there's even a term that he's used frequently called bliss ninny, which is basically saying,
yes.
Well, if this, you know, incorporating that sort of Eastern mystical tradition of, you know, Maya, this is all an illusion, I don't need to
right.
deal with it, which
right.
of course is not exactly, not what the course says at all. In fact, it says exactly the opposite. It says, you know, to deny your physical experience is a particularly unworthy form of denial, because if we deny what's happening around us, we're basically saying, I'm denigrating the power of my mind and the ability of my mind to choose a different teacher in each situation and to use the feedback that I get from my previous thoughts as a clue to what thought system I was messing with when I put this feedback that's now coming back to me into place, you know, in that operation. So
exactly.
now that we get the feedback, we can say, okay, well, here's the result that I got from choosing that. Do I want more of that or less of that? And then the results, you know, the choice becomes more obvious when we look at the results, right?
Right. Excellent point. And, you know, when we speak of denying, to go along with your point that you said, it's the only thing we end up recognizing that we're denying, the course says, is we denied at first who we are, the truth of who we are, in favor of a separated self. So the only denial is we deny our denial of truth that we denied at the beginning. So we do deny the ego's interpretation of what we see in favor of the Holy Spirit. That's how we start out. We shift, like you were saying earlier, from nightmare dreams to happy dreams, which is done in the mind, which is only how we're looking at everything. It's an attitude. And so we do deny the ego's interpretation. And ultimately, we deny our original denial of truth when we denied that we were anything less than our perfect oneness in heaven, right?
Yes, yes. And as we see everyone in our lives as a representative of that infinite spirit, that complete, unblemished holiness, not necessarily in the level of form, because, you know, as you point out, sometimes we all behave less than in a stellar way.
That's right.
Yeah, we behave badly sometimes, quite frankly. And,
that's right.
And, and, you know, and not to feel awful about that, but just to say, okay, if I can look past the behavior, if I can look past the form to the content in my mind, that's where the real effectiveness is going to kick in, because
right.
that's where I do have a choice moment to moment. But if I try to, you know, try to make the change in the world, if I try to fix the projection, instead of looking at the projector and the film that's going through it, I'm barking up the wrong tree, and I'm just going to be having an exercise in frustration that's an ongoing one, instead of, you know, where I can make a difference is, you know, particularly if I work with the screenwriter or the playwright and change what goes on to the film.
Right.
Now we're starting to do change, you know, where it makes sense, right?
Oh, yes. That is one of my favorite examples is, you know, if you're sitting in a movie theater, if you go up and you put a knife through the screen, nothing's going to change. But if you go back and change what's in the projector, then you're going to see something different on the screen, right?
Yeah, the knife cuts and the tomatoes just make it a less pleasant experience, but it's not changing what's going on in the projection room.
That's right. Exactly. Oh my God, that's a great point to end it on. Did you have any announcements or anything that you wanted to say or finish on? Any final thoughts, Bruce?
Well, I think I could let people know that as you probably have been reminding people as well, that there's another Miracle Share conference coming in October. I think it's the 19th to the 21st, and some of that's coming together. We still have more details to put together before it's on the website, but that should be happening shortly. But just kind of set aside, I think it's the 19th to the 21st in October. And if you happen to have that time already booked, just remember that around that time, you'll be able to watch all of the recorded video presentations and the audio responses in the half-hour corresponding call-in sessions anytime you want, because it's a virtual conference and there's no airfare and no hotels and no meals and no expense reports and none of that stuff, because it's a virtual conference. And
it's a virtual conference.
Enjoy it from the comfort of wherever your laptop or desktop machine happens to be, whatever.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Bruce and I will both be there presenting. And as Bruce said, you don't have to, if you can't be there live, you can watch the replays. It's just going to be wonderful. It's a lot of teachers, and we'll say more about it, like Bruce, you just said, once we get the links and everything, you know, Bruce will have links, I'll have links, and we'll announce them on this program and elsewhere. So looking forward to that, October 19th through the 21st. And again, we'll provide more info on that. That'll be awesome. So looking real forward to it. And as always, Bruce, it's so great to join with you here today. And I want to remind all of our listeners that you are loved and you are loved. And just keep practicing. You know you're not alone. And be well. And blessings, everyone. Woo! See you next time.
Thanks, everyone.